Session number 17624, John Allen, Reel 8.
Mr. Allen, Reel 8. We were discussing, and you were telling me about the process of reporting sick. Could you go on with that?
I will. You would get up in the morning, and if you felt ill at all, or there was something wrong, suppose you had a cut or whatever, you said you were wanting to go on the sick parade. And they always said yes. I never heard of a man being refused yet. And normally you have your sick bay, you have a corporal in that sick bay, and you have a medical officer. And you're paraded in front, regimental of course, you're paraded in front, and you may not feel like being paraded, but you're paraded. And you're told you'd better be sick, and because there's a report comes out. The first time I was ever on sick was long after I'd joined the army. And the medical officer sees you, and generally it's a trivial complaint. And although I've seen some very serious ones, actually, but that'll come in later in the story. But all in all, it was a very highly civilised affair, and nobody was any the worse for it. And you got good attention. You had hospitals, a Catholic hospital, because we were always around North Yorkshire and Durham and the Tyne. And you were in good care, really. And you got to know your medical corporal and you got to know your medical officer.
Was there a universal medical pill that they gave you to cover a multitude of
illnesses? It was a constipation pill, actually, you know. To make the bowels open. That was a regular thing. You'll get a number 9, you know. And for all I was a constipated person, I never got one. That was the funny thing. I remember saying to the MO or the corporal in the sick bay once, do you know I've been a lifelong constipated person and I've never been offered one of those? Oh, yeah, he says, they'll open you up, boy. But they don't. Because even laxatives now don't. I've got to take quite a considerable amount to get the bowel moving.
What might you get for tea?
Tea would be mostly bread, jam, butter, and a mug of tea. Or a boiled egg. And that was a gift. That was a present. A real star day. A red star. But there was one time, I remember thinking, by God, they even think of that. And we came in from outdoor exercise, and we weren't at Ravensworth then, but we were somewhere else, say. And we went into the dining hall. And on everybody's, all in every position where a man was going to sit, you brought your own utensils and your mug and your tin plate. There was a lion's pie, a fruit pie. Now, we'd never seen such a thing, you know. And that must have cost quite a bit of money. And every man got one. And some of them couldn't believe it. In fact, they were beautiful. And it was a Friday. And I remember thinking, I wonder how many Fridays will go by before we get another one of these. But funnily enough, we got one or two over the periods of time. And it was remarkable. I remember once telling my mum, I said, you know, Mum, we get treats. Oh, yeah? What sort of treats? I said, we sometimes get lion's fruit pies. You know, and they're beautiful. You do? Well, we can't get them, you know. So that's where they were going, to the forces.
Was your day then finished after tea?
Yes, unless you were on guard or picket. And you spent your time either reading, which I did a fair bit of, or I like art, and I used to sketch a bit, and it was getting dark by then, in winter time particularly, but you could do what you liked, and you met each other in your canteen, whatever it consisted of. Some of them were elaborate, some were just tents made into a canteen, and you got a cup of tea and an Eccles cake, which was a popular thing. And you just had about the right amount of cash, if you didn't smoke, that was, to provide yourself with a cup of tea and a wad anytime you went to the canteen. And I never smoked. I've never smoked in my life. And consequently, I had a little bit more than the average, because most of the money went on smokes.
Did you do a lot of evenings, spend a lot of evenings cleaning your webbing?
Yes, you had to have it. You had to keep it up to scratch.
How did you keep it clean in a tent? Because it mustn't be very
well. You had hooks on the main pole, and if you were there first, you took the top one, and you could hook them on with various parts of the equipment. And if you got them dirty, you just had to get them cleaned right away, and it consisted of a nail brush and water and scrub. In fact, they encouraged you to blanco it, you know, with a khaki blanco. And then they began to say, make it, bleach it. It looks better. It looks as if you're soldiers. You look too much like tailor's dummies with the khaki blanco. And some of the equipment, you could tell a good soldier by his equipment. And when you had a guard inspection, it was fantastic, because...
How did you clean your brasses?
How did you
clean... Your badge and brasses, how
did you clean? You had some brass or some liquid like that, you know. And I bought a tin of brass, and the thing was making sure that lid was tight. And wrap it, I used to wrap it round with a cloth, so that if it leaked slightly, that cloth absorbed it. But it made a mess, you know, it made a mess of your hands. And you had a button stick that could keep the webbing equipment away from the metal parts. And you cleaned those. You put the brasso on, or whatever liquid you used, and you let it dry, and you saw various men in various equipment lying around on bushes, draped over bushes or fences, drying off. And then when they were dry, you'd use your button stick again and give them a polish with the button brush.
Did you have to purchase the brasso and the blanco yourselves out of your money?
At the canteen. Mm-hmm. So all in all, you were complete. You could do everything they asked of you, and it was up to you to keep everything shipshape, you know.
At what point in your training were you considered now soldierly enough to go on guard and do a guard?
Almost from the beginning. They didn't expect you to be perfect, but you got a taste of the guard. For this reason, I think, when I look back on it, that it was four on, two on, four off. Two on, four off through the night. And so you got at least two-hour duty periods of guards. And sometimes it meant static in one position with a sentry box or a patrol walking, marching or walking, pacing right round the camp, checking any hut to make sure that there was, if it was a weapons or ammunition hut, to make sure it was safe, and just keep a general eye on the camp. And by reveille was sounded, you'd had two spells of duty, and you were given the rest of the day off. And the rest of the day you had to utilize to clean up any equipment that you had to keep your overcoats, your trench coats clean. You had to press your trousers, put them under your blanket, under your mattress if you had one, which we didn't, but you could get a crease in them. Some people resorted to having their mum run a thread, run a what a seam up, and in time they looked ridiculous because they bagged with the knees, you see, and they were a beautiful straight line, and they were coming round the shape of the knee, and you would get told politely, get those little trousers put right, and you'd have to take them away to the battalion tailor, and he would have to pick all that out and press them and say, charge you a few coppers or whatever for the regimental funds.
Can you take me through the process of guard mounting?
Yeah. There was generally six men, a lance corporal, a full corporal, or if it was important enough, a sergeant. The corporal often took the guard. I did myself when I was a full corporal. And you would go to the guard room, which is normally at the entrance of the camp. In some camps, you put it where it suited the commanding officer. And you were paraded, and you worked most... You were excused the parade in the afternoon if you were on that night guard. Alan, Davison, you're on guard tonight. Get away and get yourself prepared, for I'll be inspecting it. So your own company commander would be there, or your platoon officer. And you were supposed to be spick and span. Now, the place where that was expected most was, it, funnily enough, School Aycliffe, because it was it was like a barracks, and you had a complex of huts, rooms, buildings, and you had a parade ground, you had a gym, you had everything. Well, it was for the boys that were under correction by law, and therefore it fitted in beautifully as an army camp, because you even had what do you call those rooms where they have the padded cells for the unruly ones, you know, so they couldn't hurt themselves. And our lads, the delinquents, were thrown in there, you know, and just forgot about for a few
hours. We'll come to that later, of course. Can we go through the process of guard mounting? You're being told you're going on guard,
yeah,
and you're being released to get ready.
You get ready, and you might mount at 6 o'clock. So you're on parade, and they generally pick a smart paved area, so you can hear the feet hitting the deck, and you can do your drill as you turn away, and open ranks, open order, and have your weapons inspected, and you go right through it, and you're examined by the sergeant first, and he goes and tells the officer, your own corporal expects you to be there and not make him look a fool, because he'll get the thick end of it. And this is what I said to you earlier on, the boot has to be clean. Not only the boot, but the bottom, the sole itself, and especially from the heel down to the sole, that little bit.
Did you have to polish studs?
Sometimes we had to. You were told to. And others, officers said no, because they're double-edged. They can be too polished and you can slide. So just keep them clean. Well, what I used to do was use a piece of sandpaper and just roughen them up, and they glistened. But they examined your studs. And the first time they ever did that to me, I thought, well, I've heard of it, but this is ridiculous. And it was, lift your right foot so I can examine your studs. And I went, yeah, put my foot up, you know, and put your foot down, put the other one up. And for a lot of times, the cleanest, the smartest member of the six-man or eight-man guard got what was called the stick. And a sash, the green and red sash, and a stick. a little cane stick with a silver head, and you carried that around, and you went with the orderly officer wherever he went. And you did your turn of guard as well, mind. But you got that to show that you were the smartest lad. And I got it on many occasions, I would imagine. And I think I was a soldier. I like to be smart.
So you were inspected, and your turnout had to be of a high standard.
Mm.
What happened to you then?
You were brought to attention. You made the salute. They presented arms and saluted, and then you were dismissed. And you were marched. You were dismissed from the parade of inspection, and then the corporal of the guard took over, or the sergeant, depending on how big a guard it was. On a big camp such as School Aycliffe, there sometimes were 12 on it, you know, and they had several posts around the camp itself to man. And the guard, they would be manned by the corporal marching you as a single man, single unit, to take over this from this man at post A, and then he took the others to post B, etc. And you did that, and you had to be relieved in 2 hours. And that worked out pretty well. And through the night, it was boring at times, but I used to just let my imagination wander. I never felt that I was sleepy or anything, although many men were caught asleep.
Which would be an offence, was it?
Oh, yeah. You could be charged. In fact, I never... I think I've heard of men being up in front of the CEO, but he's given them a good ticking off, because it reflects on him too, you know, if there's far too many of them. But I never... I found them quite easy, because... through my life, I've never needed really much sleep, and consequently, a guard was to me very easy.
Was there a guard tent, in effect, where you all stayed for the night and then moved?
Well,
to
a room. If you were in a camp itself.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the unit.
Of the tented camp. That would be a tent, yeah.
But in another camp, it was a proper guard room.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Did the orderly officer come round you in the night as well?
Oh, yes. You could get, without you knowing it, the orderly officer could be around watching you, you know, and it was incredible, because some fellas never knew he'd been around. And he would say to them, "What were you doing on your guard, for instance, when you bent down and you were looking into that bush or something like that?" And he would say, "Oh, I thought I heard something." Or some of them would say, "How do you know?" And "But I do know. I'm the officer commanding the guard, and it's my duty to know."
Were you taught to challenge?
Yes. Now, funnily enough, at Ravensworth, this actually happened, Harry. I suppose it's all right to use Harry on there. Right. Now, this incident actually happened in Ravensworth, at Ravensworth. We had a man on the what was called the farm post, and anyone approaching from the farm into Ravensworth Castle, which the farm was one of the tenants of the Lord, and he was attached to the farm by the castle by a road, and consequently we had a sentry there, a sentry at the bottom, that led onto what we know as the coach road, which you can see going up by the Western Bypass. And another sentry over that side of the camp. And they were visited by the sergeant or the corporal twice, three times during the 2 hours. And he had to make sure they were alert. Now, you consequently, because you were in that camp, you got to know everybody. And you could you could hear the voice. An officer, for instance, if an officer shouted at you, even in the dark, you knew it was Captain Nixon or whatever. And you were shown how to challenge. You said, "Halt, who goes there?" And generally the reply was, "Friend." Okay. "Approach friend and be recognized." And then you knew who it was. You said, pass, friend. And it was formal. Now, a lot of times that never happened. And this one night, I was on guard. And there was a boy called Ryan from West Hartlepool. And he was on the farm post. And there was a captain and a lieutenant coming back from a bit of a night out. Wherever they'd been, I don't know. But the troop, the other ranks, weren't allowed out because we were still being trained and we weren't considered good enough to represent the DLI. But these officers were. So they were coming back at night. And this Ryan said, halt, who goes there? And he said, friend or something, the captain. Something like that was said. And Ryan said, it's Captain so-and-so. Come forward. And the captain said, you came forward. And he said, you don't know it was me. You have to make sure it's a friend. He said, but I do know it's you. I know you. I know your voice. And he said, that's not the point. You've got to do it this way, the correct way. And the very next night, there was someone had came through that, must have been another rank or an NCO, and he said, halt, who goes there? My friend, advance, friend, and be recognised. And he didn't advance. And this sentry picked his rifle up and fired, and he had live ammunition, and he fired. And there was hell on. There was actual hell on earth. They called the guard out. Nearly everybody in the camp woke up. They heard the shot. And he said, it was rather strange, you know, we were given live ammunition because it was wartime. In fact, the 70th Young Soldiers trained with nothing but live ammo. You might have heard that from several of them up to now. And there was a court of inquiry and they brushed it aside, really, because they were still being trained. But they've got a lot of powers in the hand. You know, a commanding officer can, I suppose, brush that aside because he was quite satisfied. There was no ill intent or evil intent. But everybody used to say, he's a bit of a nutter, that man. Fancy firing.
Did you do picket duty as well?
Yes, we did.
What's the difference between a picket duty and a guard?
Well, a picket duty is unarmed. They go around as a fire picket or a perimeter picket to make sure that there's no breaches in there or fire hazards, and you're employed the whole time. Now and again, the pickets used to be armed, but with consideration that you might be out in the country, and you never know who the devil is going around. It could be enemy agents, let's be fair. They must have had enemy agents in the vicinity of Britain anyway. And the pickets were considered easy meat for a young soldier or a trained soldier. They didn't take up. They weren't really serious, but they were in command of a corporal at least. And you got into trouble if you missed a picket. For instance, I did, and I had a cousin living at Stockton, and we were outside Middleton St. George, and it's a fair distance to Stockton, but we used to walk it and never think of anything. And I knew I was on picket, and it was an aerodrome, and it was so well looked after that you felt, well, what is the picket? There's a guard there anyway. And I, with another man, decided that we would go into Stockton. And I took him up to see my cousin, and she had children at the time. Her husband was a warrant officer overseas. And when we got back, we were hauled in front of the guard commander. He said, Alan, and Sellers, I think the boy from Yorkshire, from the Coileys, he was with me, and they said, "You've missed a picket." I said, "Yeah." "Was I missed? Really missed?" "Yeah, you missed. You're on a charge." And you know, I'd never had a charge in the army, and I was up in front of the company commander, and he gave me 10 days battalion prison. And you had your hair shaved off, you know. And I said, I didn't say anything at the time, I just accepted it. But after it was over, I saw the RSM one morning walking through the camp, and he said, "Have you learned a lesson?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Shall I tell you something, sir?" He said, "Yeah, what?" I said, "I was told when I started in the army that my first charge would be just forgotten, because you have to learn the lesson. You're on a charge. You don't get any consequence of punishment because of it." He said, "Who told you that?" I said, "My first sergeant, ex-World War One man." He said, "Oh, well, why didn't you say that to the company commander? And you might have not been so severely dealt with." I said, "Oh, I wasn't going to ask favours." I said, "Because it's not fair." He said, "What's not fair?" I said, "Well, the other lad, he would get it anyway, wouldn't he?" He went, "Oh, well, I'll look into it for you." So I remember company commander was a man called McAdam, and he was a businessman from Newcastle. And he saw me later on, not in the office, he just saw me outside. He said, "You're Alan." Uh-huh. He said, "You've just done 10 days in the prison here." I said, "Uh-huh." He said, "You should have said, you know, that it was your first charge." I said, "But you should have known. My charge sheet couldn't have had anything on it, bar the one charge." He said, "Yes, that's right. Maybe I should have." He said, "Anyway, we've learned a lesson, have we?" I said, "Yeah." That was it.
What was the difference between the mounting of picket and guard?
Well, you didn't really mount it as such. The guard was an official duty, and the picket was like a subsidiary of the guard. You might have a picket sent out to do many things, you know. It's very vague. In fact, I was only on two pickets, and I found them so easy that you wondered why they did them, you know. They could have dispensed with them, I think. But it was a very... You didn't consider that you were... If you had a duty in a picket, you couldn't say when you were picked for guard, "I've just done a picket," because that meant nothing. You know, the guard was the thing. Now, you got one guard per week, most of the men.
Did the picket go through the night as well?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm.
And were you in a kind of, again, in a one tent, all of you on picket in one tent going out to whatever?
Well, the only time we had pickets was in the RAF camp. And I think that was because of the perimeter of the airport, you know, where the runways. And we certainly used the pickets there, and they were valuable because you continually marched round armed, that picket, it was like a patrolling guard on those occasions.
Had you been allocated to a squad in this initial training battalion?
Yeah, you had. There were two companies there, if I remember correctly, and you belonged to one or the other, and you belonged to, in that company, you belonged to a section, a platoon and a section. And you had a lance corporal in charge of each section and a full corporal in charge of each, the platoon's corporal and the platoon sergeant.
How were they identified from each other?
In which way?
Well, were they numbered or named or, you know?
Oh, you mean the sections and them? Yeah, it would be A Company, one section, or A Company, B section, whatever. And you knew your company sergeants well, because you saw them every day, and you began to know that the other sergeant was in charge of B platoon, and you knew you've always, I found that you always tried to get into where your close friends were. But that always didn't work because you came, for instance, I came back from a leave once and I was in C company. And I was greeted with, when I got to the Nissen Hut where I was stationed, said, "Your kid's not here, it's in D company." And that was at the opposite side of the airport, you know. Oh, damn.